Hey guys, how you doing? It's Mark here from 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and welcome to episode 9 of the 30 Plus Men's Fitness podcast. I have to say, guys, I'm extremely excited about introducing my guest today, and I'm going to do that very shortly. But first things first, just a little bit of 30 Plus news. Had some wonderful feedback on the back of interviewing my recent transformation client, Anthony Lee, last week, about his battles with alcoholism, depression, and how he underwent not just a physical transformation with myself, but also a mental transformation. He's now trained to be a cognitive behavioral therapist and also has recently got qualified as a bootcamp coach. And he's actually doing his first 30 Plus Bootcamp Berkshire Bootcamp very soon, this Saturday. Whether you get this before this Saturday, we don't know. But Anthony, wishing you the best of luck. I'm sure you're going to be a great success. And it's onwards and upwards for me here, guys. If you follow my emails, you'll know that my youngest son, Elliot, has been in hospital for quite a long time with a really nasty infection in the disc in his back. We actually got some great news that he could come home last Friday. We thought he'd be there for another month. He'd already been there for 6 weeks. We've got to give him quite a lot of oral medication, but that's great because he's no longer in pain. He's home and he's back with his brother, John, and it's back to the craziness in the house. But you know what, guys, I've been buzzing on energy all week. I feel wonderful, despite not having a great deal of sleep, which is what you get with two young kids at home. But just to have my boys home, I've got great focus, and it's no longer a case of just trying to maintain things like I have been for the last 6 weeks, but now I'm really pushing it forward. And this Friday, I'll be flying up to Scotland to meet a lot of my online clients and hook up with Coach Liam before we officially kick off 30 Plus Bootcamp Glasgow in July. So lots happening. I'm really, really excited. And I'm grateful to all you guys for listening to the podcast and giving me the great feedback. So I really, really appreciate it, guys. So let's get into today's podcast. Today, I'm going to be interviewing somebody who was one of my original mentors. He is a big, big cheese in the fitness industry, and he's one of the most knowledgeable guys I've ever met. I was lucky to spend 10 days with him back in 2012 when I went out to a retreat in Thailand to one of his courses whereby I learned how to set up my online business. Well, if you're listening to this, it's probably because you found me online, and Dax was wonderful in everything he taught me, and I've since gone on to have a very successful online business, which has allowed me to reach so many men over the age of 30 and help them feel better never using my methods. So I'll be always grateful to Dax, and I'm about to bring him in. He's a very, very busy man. So the fact that he literally just said to me, "Tregs, I'm in," was wonderful. So Dax Moy, how are you, my friend?
I am awesome, mate. I'm really, really pleased to be here. Looking forward to having a bit of a chin wag with you and see where we're going to take this. Because as we were just saying, we haven't like super scripted this or anything. I know we're having a bit of a chat about a few things that are going to be interesting to your guys.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to this. To be honest, it's always how I prefer to converse with people, like talk about things off the cuff. So
brilliant.
It comes out much more natural and much more fun.
Excellent. Okay, Dax. So what I've got like a list of my own questions, really, because, you know, as much as I want you to share your story with the listeners, I mean, the fitness industry seems to be changing its mind all the time. So, you know, whilst I'm 100% confident in my methods and the results I've got with my clients over time, I'm still going to be picking your brains, dude, because there's mornings I wake up and I'm confused. I'm really, really confused. And like I said, you're one of the most knowledgeable guys I've ever met. And I'm really looking forward to getting your perspective on a number of hot topics in the fitness industry at the moment. Okay, buddy. So are you ready to rock and roll? Are you ready to dive into it?
Go for it. Let's do it.
Okay, so Dax Moy, for those of my listeners that, you know, they're regular over 30s men, working class guys, they're working hard. They may not keep an eye on the fitness industry like I do. Tell the listeners, tell my tribe, who is the great Dax Moy?
Dax Moy is a guy with a really bloody weird name, with an even weirder background and history, who now basically, I mean, you know, it's interesting because we're having this conversation related to the fitness industry, but I don't, whilst part of what I do is fitness now, I've grown up from the fitness industry just a little bit. Now what I do is I coach and mentor and educate health and wellness professionals to basically coach and educate their clients. So that's one part of my business. But I also have, like, I've got several, you know this, Mark, but kind of obviously your listeners don't, I have several strings to my bow. So I've got a really, really kind of interesting place in the marketplace right now. So one of the things I do is educate health and fitness professionals, life coaches, holistic health coaches, all that kind of stuff, all around the world. So I spend a lot of time on the road, traveling around the world, lecturing in neuroscience, neurophysiology, endocrinology, kind of all the ologies, kind of, yeah, name-ology, and I kind of found myself teaching it, right? So that's one side of things. I also then coach and mentor people in the same industries into, how do we put this? I coach them into building their businesses, which is how we first met. So you came to me kind of via the business building side, because I've done very, very well for myself against all the odds. I've kind of done extremely well for myself in this industry. And then the other part of what I do is essentially I work with very, very high-end performers, everyone from CEOs, pop stars, polar explorers, A-listers, even royalty. And I work with them either one-to-one or on very, very highly intensive retreat programs, where we run kind of very detailed transformation programs. So I'm not a big believer in that transformation has to take a lot of time. I believe it can happen extremely quickly. Wow. But the change is always slow. So kind of most people won't kind of get that kind of change transformation. Here's the interesting thing. Most people think that they're engaged in the process of transformation, and really what they're engaged in is the process of change. And change takes a long time. Kind of change is two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. Transformation is a very, very specific thing that happens in a specific brain center called the basal ganglia. And once you've transformed, you never go back. Okay, so most people battling with the same thing over and over again. So they lose 20 pounds and they feel awesome and they're like, fuck yeah, I feel great, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then kind of 60 days later, they look in the mirror and they go, oh, where did it all go wrong? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of, and then it's like, Trey, you've got to help me out. Well, probably not your clients, because your clients probably keep their results a lot longer, right? But kind of they're getting a hold of their coaches, getting a hold of their trainers, saying, oh, God, I need to kick up the arse again. I need to get back on track. Well, that's indicative of people who are caught up in a change cycle rather than a transformation cycle. So what I get paid a lot of money, and I can't believe, you know, I grew up on a housing estate in North London.
Yeah.
I'm a North London boy, housing estate boy, kind of from a very violent background, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And now my clients include royalty and they pay me crazy amounts of money. But what they pay me for ultimately is transformation.
Brilliant.
So I'm involved in the industry, but you could say it's from I'm inside of it as a coach, I'm outside of it as an educator, and then I'm outside of it again as a mentor and kind of business advisor to people that are building it. So I'm involved at every layer, but I'm still in the trenches.
That's a really great introduction, and you've touched on a few things there which are really, really important. And, you know, yeah, whilst I've got a great success record with my clients, now we've got such a huge online business, we do have people pop up that have lost 10, 15 pounds and then they've got the tools and it's like a self-sabotage. Hey, you know, we've all done it. I've done it. You know, I've really struggled with my weight more so than ever since having kids. And I'm open. I talk about that, you know, because I'm not getting the sleep that I had and I'm tired and I'm stressed, et cetera, et cetera. So this is really interesting because you've already sort of gone down that psychology route. And I know that you are heavily into that. Okay. And what's quite poignant is you've already spoken about your huge success and, you know, it blows you away. And a lot of people probably just see Dax Moy and they just think, hey, there's this successful guy, you know, you're charging up to 20 grand for a week-long retreat, right?
Training 25.
25 grand, okay? That's what one of the first things I read about you. And you just imagine that, you know, Dax is just this kind of like superpower and he was just born like it. Well, when I first went to Thailand in 2012 and I met Dax, you know, he was just a regular guy, just like me, like a regular working class guy who's actually... who's programmed his mind to success and gotten to where he is today. So Dax, you already mentioned about a little bit about your sort of childhood. Do you mind taking us right back and be as open as possible? Because when you told me in Thailand, it completely blew my mind. So, you know,
right.
you've said you're going to be open. Take him back, Dax.
Absolutely, absolutely. Open book. So here's the thing. I grew up on council estates and squats in mostly in North London. My mum lived around a little bit, but kind of mostly in North London. Never ever knew my real dad at all. Kind of never met him, even to this day. I've never met him. But the person who came into my life as my stepdad, effectively, he was a violent alcoholic, wife batterer, child abuser, physical child abuser, not sexual, but kind of physical abuse. And you know, he was effectively a criminal. He spent most of his life in and out of prison for armed robbery and all kinds of stuff like that. So a gangster, a Glaswegian gangster. And my mum must have met him at kind of like a time in his life when he was going through his kind of most, you know, crazy upheaval. He'd not long been out of prison for about the 20th time. And, you know, kind of we had a very, very, very violent upbringing off the back of that. He was often drunk, like more often than not, like 7 days in a week, probably 5 days of the week he was drunk, right? So it was quite a lot of time. And most of those days would end up with some seriously violent altercation in the house, including, you know, being chased around with hammers and knives and kind of stuff like that. So it was pretty violent. I grew up with that from the age of six until I was 15. And at 15, kind of one night in my house, I woke up to hear my mum screaming. She was kind of being beaten up by my dad again for about a millionth time. I ran into the living room, thought that I punched him to get him off. What actually happened was that I didn't even know how it got there, but effectively I punched a 6-inch hunting dagger through his heart. So I was 15 years old, stabbed my dad through the heart. Wow. I kept him alive, but I was charged by the police with attempted murder. So I was 15 years old and getting an attempted murder rap. Being the kind of the gangster that he was, you know, honor among thieves and all that kind of stuff, he refused to press charges. The police dropped the case. And but I wasn't able to live at home, so I went to live with my grandmother for a little while, and then I left there and kind of went to live in the mountains. Basically, I went to live in Wales in the Brecon Beacons for a while, and I was living off the land. I was poaching, I was hunting, I was doing some day work on farms. I was literally like living in a little home, you know, little shelter that I made on a riverbank. It's kind of crazy. Then I went off and now joined the junior leader parachute regiment. So kind of I joined the paras when I was young. Later on, kind of made the kind of the biggest crime you could possibly make, and ended up joining the Royal Marines. Later on, kind of as a reserve forces soldier, I was kind of involved in surveillance and target acquisition, and like working in 4-man patrols, all that kind of stuff to kind of learn to call in enemy artillery strike, calling artillery and airstrikes, all that kind of stuff. So surveillance and target acquisition, which was my final role. And so I joined the forces at 16. I came out of green in total. Probably I was about 33. Yeah, about 33.
Okay, over half your life there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a long time. So you know, kind of, I spent quite a bit of time in green. I did loads of amazing things. Kind of learned loads and loads of amazing skills. But I think the biggest thing that I learned from being a soldier really was initially it was about goal focus. Like soldiers, you know, when you're serving, you're extremely goal focused. There's something you have to do. There's an objective you have to complete. There's something that requires you to say, I'm going to do that. This is what I have to do to get it. And you just go and bloody do it. Right. So being in the military really did serve me in that way. One of the things about me is the military never really owned me. So unlike a lot of people who the military used them, I actually used them for myself. I kind of got all the Boy Scout badges of different things that I wanted to do. I went on medics courses, explosives courses, and you name it. I did a whole bunch of stuff and managed to get out of it what I wanted.
Right.
When I became a reservist, because I've got four kids, when I became a reservist, so I could kind of be at home a lot more, I had to obviously kind of supplement my reserve forces income with a real job. And so I did everything from literally, like at first it was so hard to get work. I was a road sweeper for a time. I worked in the sewers. I was a builder. I was a hod carrier. I was like, you name it. I just did lots and lots of jobs. And I knew basically for me, the most important thing was always keeping food on the table for my family. So I wasn't too proud. I just went and did what I had to do.
Absolutely.
I got some work as a bodyguard, kind of included doing some work for the Saudi royal family. That was okay. It was pretty boring though. Kind of really best money I'd ever earned in my life up to that point, but it wasn't awesome. It wasn't cool. And then I was starting to do the work on myself a little bit more. I've always been very introspective. I've always been a deep reader into self-help and all that kind of stuff. And I started asking myself really, you know, what was the direction I was going to take my life? And this was around, I was age 28 really when I started to really make some of these bigger decisions that were away from the military. Because you've got to understand, originally I thought I was going to be a soldier for life. I thought I was going to join and that would be it. You know, I'd come out of the forces at age like 50 something, having kind of served my entire life and become a sergeant major in the special forces or something. That was my kind of map, and it changed, right? So I was using kind of all the self-help literature. I was reading all the books. I was doing all the stuff and kind of really thinking about the direction I wanted to take my life. And I kept seeing this core theme that kept coming back. Like, I'd always been involved in fitness. I got into boxing at age 12, did really well, kind of, then I joined these, not just joined the armed forces, but joined these very physical regiments with very, very high levels of physical commitment and physical challenge. And then got really involved in kind of training other people and getting them fit through all of that. So I was like, okay, well, kind of I'll join the fitness industry. And you know, I went along to my local gym and kind of told them my background and all the rest of it. And they're like, too bad, we don't really care what you did in the forces. You've got to go along to the YMCA and do a 2-week fitness instructor's award. Which I did. I had hardly any money. I was broke at the time. It was literally we had about 300 odd quid in the bank, and at the time the YMCA gym instructor's award was 325 quid. Right, so I spent literally every penny I had to go and do that course. Came out, went back to the same gym. They said, "Oh yeah, we do have a shift," and the shift they had was a 2-hour shift per week on a Saturday morning in the dead zone when nobody else wanted to come in, and it's £5 an hour. So I spent a couple of months earning £10 a week, literally £10 a week out of that gym.
How old were you at the time, Dax?
I was 28.
Wow,
28. I'm still involved in the reserve forces and stuff, but kind of this, you know, kind of 28 years old and I'm earning £10 a week, like, yeah, pocket money at a gym. But unlike most of the other guys who were there and didn't really want to spend much time there and thought that everything was beneath them and I'm not getting paid enough to be here, I actually end up spending about 40 hours a week at the gym, working with people, talking to people, showing them stuff, demonstrating them stuff. And eventually I got my personal training certificate and stuff like that. I become a GP referral specialist. I started working in kind of neural rehab and all this kind of stuff. So I was working with people with diseases and disabilities and kind of doing this nervous system stuff. I was getting people out of wheelchairs, healing them up. Like, people had been working with physios for years and barely able to lift their arm because they'd had a stroke. And within like 3 weeks of working with me, they're reaching the top shelf of their cupboards and stuff like that, right?
Wow.
So I took a very different approach because I'd spent so much time with people and I did it for free. I managed to build, as soon as I was allowed to become a personal trainer at the gym, my business exploded. I mean, I went from nothing to like 60 hours a week, and I did an entire year of 60 hours a week as a trainer.
Oof, I've been there. Yeah.
I don't just mean a 60 hour week. I mean, 60 appointments per week.
Wow.
Right. And you know, kind of that, which was great to do 60 appointments, you know, takes about 85, 90 hours.
Yeah.
Right. So kind of, I was working a full, really, really full on week. And at the end of that first year, I went and opened my own studio in the back of a small church, like a church hall. That's where my first studio was. I was there for 18 months, did really well, exploded, went across the road, basically took over this new place. And I've been there ever since. Like, I've been there for like 12, 13 years now in the building that I'm in. I'm currently in Islington, North London now. But since then, I went on to kind of run certifications to teach trainers how to do this stuff. I've appeared on every terrestrial TV channel. I've been on Sky, CNN, been in every magazine and newspaper in the UK pretty much. I get 16 pages in men's health. I became a published author several times. My first book on goal achievement, it did like $107,000 in the first 7 days of launching it. It was like, yeah, I was an unknown author going up against people like Tony Robbins and stuff. I've worked with a lot of people. Sorry?
Tell the listeners the name of that product, the name of that book.
It's called The Magic 100, and you can still get it on Amazon. It's there. And I've done a crazy amount of stuff. I've also, you know, many of the names that are kind of big names in the health and fitness industry, they've mentored or coached directly under me as they were coming up. So I've kind of been responsible for the coaching of a lot of people. I now run online tribes of, you know, Fitness Market Made Simple, which is one of my tribes, is over 4,000 people in that particular group. Yeah, I mean, I have fingers in a lot of pies. Sure. I do a lot of interesting things. But now, you know, I got myself to the point where I was the highest paid personal trainer in the UK. And then I switched hats and decided to stop thinking of myself as a trainer and move much more to being a transformation coach. And that just escalated things massively. And now, like, I earn the kind of money I'd never believed I'd ever earn in my life, coming from the background that I earn. I came from, sorry. And but I get to work with the most amazing people. And, you know, I'm extremely thankful for absolutely everything that I've got going on in my life.
Dax, it's a great story. I mean, you know, to go from earning £10 on a Saturday afternoon at the age of 28, which is not young, by the way, to where you are now is simply an incredible tale. And one of the things that you said is thankful, gratitude, thankful is something that I have learned to imply into my life in recent, well, probably in about the last 4 or 5 years. And it's really helped me with my business. And more so of late now, since the kids have been home, I've been really being grateful for them home, being grateful for my business, just being thankful. And this stuff really does work. It's extremely powerful. So here's a guy that was brought upon a tough North London housing estate, stabbed his dad through the heart at 15, almost went to jail. Was earning £10 now as a personal trainer at the age of 28 to here we are now as to basically travel all over the world, you know, name your price and help, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. It's a great story. So
if I heard somebody else tell me my story, I think they were talking bullshit, you know. It doesn't sound like it's possible, but it's exactly what's happened to me.
So Dax, how old are you currently, if you don't mind me asking?
116. but other than that, I'm 44. I'm 45 this year.
Okay, so Dax is 45. He obviously has been in the industry a while. He's accrued a lot of knowledge, and he is, you know, like I said, he's very clued up on all things nutrition and training. And I want to dive in, and I want to ask you your opinions on certain things, Dax. Okay, so here's something that I've noticed, and this is, I want to talk about the whole clean eating versus the flexible dieting kind of argument boom. Now, when I was based out of a CrossFit gym about 4 to 5 years ago, let me take you a little back. When I got into the industry, it was all about, you know, the food pyramid, eating your whole grains, eating your like 6-7 portions of carbohydrates a day. And, you know, when I started to apply that initially to some of my clients, they were getting fatter. You know, I was based at a CrossFit gym, and this whole paleo kind of diet was the new in thing. And I have to be honest to you, you know, when I switched to that, you know, sort of lowered my carbohydrates and sort of increased my fats and was eating a lot of, you know, meat and fish, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I got myself in good shape. I was at my leanest. I was applying that to all of my clients, you know, really sort of cutting back on the carbohydrates and up in the fats. And it was almost as if, like, well, calories don't actually matter. You know, just cut your carbohydrates down and increase your fats and your greens and plenty of protein. And then it kind of moved into hormones a couple of years ago. That was the big sort of buzzword. You know, you have to be able to manipulate and manage your hormones and to stay in shape. And then it kind of moved into detoxification. Like, detoxification, all these trainers are running detox programs. Hey, I put my hands up. I've done them. I'm not peddling juices in those, but I'm just getting my clients to eat real food from the land. And if you want to call that a detox, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but obviously it's just a term. And now there's this whole flexible dieting boom. It's like you go on Instagram and everyone's trying to fit pizza and ice cream into their macros. Actually, you know, carbs aren't evil anymore. You need to, well, we've always really known that carbs aren't evil because obviously we need them to fuel the brain primarily. But things are just changing all the time. And it's like this whole clean eating versus IFFYM argument is almost getting a little bit out of hand. I've seen people have some wild arguments on Facebook, Twitter, you know, sugar, is it toxic? Is it not? Dax, talk to me. Tell my listeners. I mean, like I said, I'm confident in my methods, but I'm really interested to hear your take on everything.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? The whole thing's nuts. So look, first off, I'm going to kind of preface this by saying what I'm about to offer you is my opinion. Yep. My opinion is based upon science, but like anything, right? Kind of, I can say one thing, and someone else over there can go and pull 15 reference papers out their ass and say, kind of, this is kind of, I can prove to you what Dax Moy is saying is wrong, and then I can go, oh, well, I've got 16 reference papers over here, so we can do this all day, right?
Sure.
As somebody who has, first off, you know, I am one of those guys who, you know, I wrote a diet based around the elimination, right?
Sure.
So the elimination diet off my own website was downloaded over 250,000 times. I gave it away to other trainers to give away. It's probably been downloaded over 1,000,000 times. My diet, kind of out there in the interweb somewhere, right? So, do I believe in the elimination diet still? Yes. And just for those people who don't know exactly what I'm talking about, no wheat, no dairy, no caffeine, no alcohol, no processed food, no sugar, right? A clean diet. Some people call it a detoxification diet, right? Other people go kind of just say it's just another form of kind of abstinence, right? The theory behind an elimination diet is really, really simple. It's not saying that all of these foods are bad for you. It's saying that we don't know whether these foods are bad. There are some foods that are much more indicated for making people ill, and part of that illness has a tendency to make them fat, because fat cells also double up as kind of little toxic storehouses that hold on to the crap that you can't process very well, right?
You said the word toxic. Yeah. Another big word at the minute. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
So I'll talk to you about that in a second as well, because the industry has got some really interesting concepts around. If you want to get into a fight with someone, talk about toxicity.
I've given up.
I'll talk to you about that in just a second. But ultimately, what the elimination diet is not saying, hey, wheat is bad for you, dairy is bad for you, sugar is bad for you, all of these things. It's not saying that. What it's saying is that we honestly don't know. And because we honestly don't know, let's take all of this shit out of your system for 30 days, get you cleaned up, and then systematically put one thing back at a time and look at how your body responds to it. That's it. That's all an elimination diet is. It's saying, okay, we've hit a big reboot button on your digestive system.
Yes.
Let's hit a big reboot button. Now, instead of Dax Moy saying, oh, you don't want to eat wheat because wheat's terrible for you, you can go, okay, I've just spent 3-4 days eating wheat. I haven't gotten sick. I'm not feeling bad. I haven't started to put weight back on. I'm not feeling bloated. Hey, I'm cool. That means wheat is okay for you, but it may not be for me.
Yeah,
I can tolerate small amounts of wheat when I'm not hyper stressed by other things, when my body isn't being run down by too many other things, right? If when it's being run down by other things, wheat doesn't like me very much.
Sure.
Right. But that's all an elimination diet is. An elimination diet is the opportunity to hit a big reboot button on your nervous system, on your metabolic system, on your endocrine system, and say, okay, instead of some expert outside of you saying that's really bad and you should never touch that, and if you ever eat that again, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
It's your own nervous system saying to you, hey, how do you feel about this food? And your nervous system says, no, I'm good with it. Thanks very much.
Sure. Boom,
that's it, right?
Sure.
Now, just before we move on to the next bit, so that we can kind of broach the topic of toxicity. There are a lot of people saying, oh, you don't have to worry about toxicity. At the end of the day, you have a liver and a kidney, and you've got kind of all these detoxification organs in your body. So anybody who says anything about detox must be talking bullshit, right?
Yes.
The argument doesn't make sense, right? These are organs that have a certain amount of processing capacity. And when you stress them beyond that processing capacity, effectively, the bath fills up, right? It overflows, and now you have a system where the detoxification organs are not able to keep. It's like supply and demand. Are they able to keep up with the supply of stuff that's coming in? At some point, they can't. If we don't believe that, then why do we say to people, don't smoke? And if we don't believe that, why do we say to people, don't drink? When you drink, you become intoxicated. What does that mean? It means your liver and your kidneys can't clear the toxins from alcohol as fast as they're coming in.
Hmm.
The toxicity level is faster than the excretory level, right? The intake is faster than the output. And that's all toxicity is. So when we're talking about, is a person toxic or aren't they toxic? What we're not saying that you don't have a liver and you don't have a kid, but we already know that what happens to an alcoholic who spent years and years boozing, right? They damage their liver.
Yep.
And so their tolerance to things goes down.
Yep.
And what happens when their liver is damaged? They start to get all kinds of renal problems and circulatory problems and digestive problems and all of that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So for people to say that toxicity entity doesn't exist in the myth doesn't make any sense. It's right. just it's a statement that's been kind of pulled out of thin air. If you I can tell you right now on my bookshelves, I've got kind of manual after manual of functional medicine stuff, like, so these are, and research paper after research paper after research paper talking about the toxic effect of this and the effect of that and super toxic or hypertoxicity in these areas.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. There are a lot of really, really vocal people out there. There are a lot of people that are out there in really great shape and are vocal. And they say, hey, that's bullshit. So you don't have to pay attention to that. Because look at me. I eat what I want. I do what yep. I want. And so we look at that and we go, oh, right. So that whole toxicity thing must be bullshit.
Sure. Sure.
But here's what I would say. Like, try it for you. Like anything, try it for yourself. Right?
Yeah.
Try it for yourself. Like, I don't think you'll ever meet a person who, after a month of eating clean and getting rid of a whole bunch of stuff, like going off, you know, have you ever gone off the boost for a whole month or you've ever done, like, right?
Fantastic.
What do you feel like at the end of it? You're like, oh, God, I feel so clean. I feel awesome.
Yeah. Gasping for a pint, but fucking awesome. Yeah.
Right. So that's elimination style diets, right? Now we start to move on to kind of carb style diet, low carb and all that kind of stuff. Like, are they good for you? I bet. I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know. Because here's the thing. No two human beings are exactly the same. So we are metabolically and biochemically different. Right, and I change from day to day depending upon the levels of my stress hormones and everything else. Right, so it's not a case of eat these foods because they're good for you and eat those foods because they're bad for you. Like I'm looking outside my window right now, my Land Rover. I've got a Discovery 3 parked right here, right by my window. Now I can pull that Discovery into my local Esso, right? Kind of pull up on the petrol station forecourt, and this is a diesel one, right? Somebody else could pull in with the same year, the same model, but they could pull in with a petrol one. And both cars are perfectly fine. But if I put diesel in the petrol one and I put petrol in the diesel one, they're screwed, aren't they? They won't
yes.
go.
Yes.
And so from externally, they look the same. And you go, it's a car. Externally, we look the same. You go, that's a human. And, oh, well, if you're a human, you're designed to eat this and you should eat that. Well, no, it's not as simple as that.
Okay.
It really isn't. And so, again, just like with the elimination diet concept, it comes back to learning about what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Sure.
So here's... I'll talk in a second about the concept of what works for you, because I think a lot of people get confused about what works.
Yeah.
They think, well, shit, it got 20 pounds off me, it works, right? But when you spend your entire life craving and moaning and going, oh, shit, life is crap now. When you're like that and you're living your life out of Tupperware boxes and kind of eating cold food and all the rest of it just so you can get your six-pack, I would say that for most people, that was never their intention when they said that they wanted to get in shape.
Sure.
So for me, my argument would be, actually, it's not working for you. It's making you unhappy, right?
Yes.
Have an extra couple of percent body fat, maybe, and have a pint every now and then and a pork pie and a...
Right. You are talking right? my language, Mr. Moy. Thank you very much.
Right. But ultimately, it comes down to the individual. So you can't say we can't just simply say that paleo is the right way for every human being to eat, because that's how our ancestors would have done it. So that's how we do it. Yes, human, from an evolutionary perspective, we do tend to change slowly, but we still change.
Yes.
And there's even changes based around which zones of the world you come from. The Quechua Indians in South America, kind of they thrive on corn and maize, and they're able to take a high carbohydrate diet. The Maasai kind of in Africa, they're a lot of their diet is meat and blood and stuff like that. The Inuit Eskimos up in Alaska, they're mostly kind of living on whale blubber and fish.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You try and give one of those diets to any one of the other groups.
Yeah.
Even though the Eskimos are really healthy, give the Maasai, and the Maasai are going to get sick.
Yeah.
Give the Maasai's diet to the Quechua, they're going to get sick. Right. So it's not the case of there's a healthy diet. There's the diet that is healthy for me. That is really it.
Sure.
Right. And I think we give up so much of our personal power to blanket statements about what's good and bad for us. And and I don't mean this disrespectfully to anyone, but it includes me and it includes you, I think. We get lazy, right? We like the shortcut answer for things. And we go, okay, well, I'd rather Dr. Moy tell me to eat this and eat that and eat that. Right. And I've had arguments with clients over the years who said, look, just write me a nutrition plan. And I go, look, I'm going to write you the nutrition plan. The very first thing you're going to do is you're going to take it away and you're going to go, oh, yeah, but I don't feel like salmon and broccoli on Monday for dinner. So I'm going to swap it for that meal. I don't feel like that. I'm going to swap it. But within 5 minutes, you're not eating the plan that I set for you anyway,
yeah,
which is ultimately another way of saying that you're always going to do things the way you want to do it,
yeah,
ultimately,
yeah,
right? And so if you're going to do it the way you want to do it, why not do it the way you want to do it from the outset? Why not stop? Why not actually spend time learning the owner's manual for yourself?
Sure.
Right? What is the operating manual for working this thing here called a body? And learn it that way. What was the other diet that you brought up? I can't remember.
Well, I wanted to... Well, so we talked about sort of paleo and then the whole clean eating. So clean eating is getting an absolute battering now because, you know, all foods do contain chemicals. We know that. But, you know, my perception of clean eating, because, hey, I recommend eating clean, is basically food, whole food in its natural state. What is your perception of clean eating?
I would say exactly the same. Kind of, is most of the food that you're consuming, is it food that came from, like, was it a carrot or was it a tin of carrots? Was it a spud that you peeled, or was it kind of something that came from a chip shop,
yeah,
with kind of, that's been, you know, kind of had all bits and pieces put all over it? Like, is it in its natural form? Like, yeah, did some work have to take place in the kitchen? Because here's another thing. Excuse me. A lot of people are looking for ways to eat faster and faster and faster, right? So kind of they're looking for ways to kind of get, you know, a while ago it was like 20-minute meals, and then it become 10-minute meals and like 5-minute meals. And now we've got 2-minute. Like, what is a way for us to, to get to our food as we possibly can? So what a lot of us are doing, we're telling ourselves bullshit stories about why we need to stay out of the kitchen. Effectively, look, as long as it's easy, as long as I can throw it in the oven and I can eat it kind of as quickly as possible with as least fuss as possible, I'll consume it. And what this does, this throws out probably the most important part of nutrition, because a big part of the story that I explain to people right now around nutrition, and this is, I'm going to get so many attacks from personal trainers who are going to hear this now, but it's absolutely true because this is based upon the nervous system. It's not what you eat, it's who you are when you eat it. Right.
Okay.
This has become one of the most powerful kind of conversations I've been having with clients over the last few years. It's not what you eat, it's who you are when you eat it. And it kind of, understand this, what happens to food once it enters here, right, is completely determined by which branch of the nervous system you're in. Are you in the sympathetic branch? Are you stressed, rushed, non-attentive, kind of mindless and doing stuff? If so, you're going to be in what's called the sympathetic branch of the nervous system. If you're in the sympathetic branch of your nervous system, you don't produce the enzymes that start the digestion here. You don't have the correct kind of acid profile in your stomach. You don't produce the correct amount of bile from your liver to break down the food. You don't get peristalsis, which moves the food around the pipes, and you don't get the proper excretory process. Metabolization is run by the nervous system.
Right.
Right. Your nervous system is run by who you are at the moment, at that moment in time, and how you're perceiving threat and stress around you. If I'm in a rush, shit, gotta go, boom, boom, boom. If I'm like this, I'm getting hardly any of the nutrition from my food,
right,
because my nervous system is running in a very different way. If I'm in a calm, relaxed way, and this actually was part of the whole role of food preparation, take time in the kitchen, because what does time in the kitchen do? Particularly if you put, like, I had a client once that I was coaching. She'd been overweight most of her life. She had a really bad experience with food. She, as off the back of our coaching, we found out that she hated being in the kitchen. She loathed being in there, so she kind of was throwing quick meals in all the time and kind of getting away with as little preparation as she could.
Yeah.
She wanted to be back out with her kids. One of the things we had her do was clear all the clutter in her kitchen because she hated it, put brighter lights in there because she only had a small kitchen and it felt dingy. And then she brought her kids into the kitchen every evening, and what they'd do is they'd put the radio on and they'd peel spuds and she'd teach them how to prep,
yeah, yeah,
the food. Right, and there'd be laughter and there'd be giggles and there'd be lots and lots of fun. She didn't feel isolated anymore. Within 2 months, she'd lost 25 pounds, right?
Wow.
But without doing anything else to actually, like, she didn't do more exercise. She didn't say to herself, oh, I'm going on a diet and I'm cleaning things up. She just brought her kids into the kitchen and spent time with them in food preparation.
Wow.
Right? So it's not so much what you eat, it's who you are when you eat it. And this is where everybody who's super into calories in, calories out,
yeah,
I'm going to say,
yeah,
that's bullshit. Like, what? Again, all I can say to anybody is go try it. Like, there have been times in your life, because there have been times in my life, where I've been able to kind of get away with almost anything, right? And we all know people who kind of throw pretty much anything they want in their mouth and they never put on an ounce. But look at those people. They're very often very relaxed, very calm, really, really happy people. Now look at the really stressed ones and the ones who get anxious about every morsel, every calorie. Have I prepped it right? Am I carrying my 18 Tupperware boxes to work with me today and all that kind of stuff? And you'll see that the people that are highly stressed are the ones that are having the highest or the worst relationship with their food.
Sure. Okay.
At the moment, I promised myself I was never going to get immersed back into nutrition, and I'm not, right? But I'm in the process of writing a book at the moment. It's called Food, A Love Story, right? And ultimately, it's the concept of moving people back. Forget about diet. The word diet is kind of anathema to most people's happiness, right? Diet is just restriction. Forget about nutrition, because nutrition is about breaking food down into its component parts and saying, do I have enough macros and micros, and am I getting the right ratios of everything, right? So diet caused us to kind of restrict ourselves and hate food, and nutrition caused us to break it down and artificially segregate everything. But there's been times in our lives when we have actually just really loved the relationship that we have with food. I think if we can get a positive relationship back with food, you won't really have to spend your life weighing and measuring and counting and all the rest of it. And I know it's going to be really hard for a lot of people to hear right now, because right now their relationship with food is such a poor one that they think that they need control. They think, if only you told me exactly what to do, would do it. The reality is that's bullshit, because every single person you're telling to do exactly, they hate it, they loathe it, and they are counting every minute. Like, we are failing with diet, right? We know that we're failing with diet, because it's as simple as this. Most people who are put on a 30-day diet are simply counting down the 30 days to say to themselves, thank fuck that's over. Right? That's the conversation in a person's head. So we haven't transformed anything. We just created a 30-day change and created in them a massive desire to go back to where they started 30 days ago. Now I can have a pint. Now I can have a chocolate bar. Now I can have a cake. Now I can have a bottle of wine. Now, whatever it happens to be, right? That's all we're training people for. We're training, by creating restriction, we're training people to want it even more.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if you can improve your relationship with food, and your relationship with food ultimately comes down to your relationship with yourself, if you can actually give yourself more time to do things and you can actually enjoy those things, you are far more likely to create the long-term transformation. One of the things that I say to people all the time these days is that you will never, ever, ever, ever create the body you love while doing the things you love.
Right. Wow.
If you're making yourself do shit you don't want to do, you are absolutely guaranteeing that you're never going to keep doing that. Because so if I shortcut this whole story now, what is the diet that works best in the world? The one that you stick to. What is the training program that works best in the world? The one that you stick to. And we can forget about it has to be these ratios and it has to be that. The one that you can stick to long term is the one that's going to bring you your results. And that's why you have to love the process.
Wow.
You'll only stick to something you love.
This is powerful stuff, mate. Really, really powerful. So can you just say that again, the sentence you had about the body you love, just for the listeners one more time?
Yeah. You will never, ever, ever create the body and the life you love while doing the things you loathe.
And I think that can be applied to everything, not just nutrition. Wow, that is powerful stuff. Okay, so Dax, that obviously brings us on to, I want to talk about calories and if they do count. I also want to talk about hormones, because when I was out in Thailand with you, one thing that was quite poignant is we were getting two meals a day. We were told that if you wanted to create a great product, do not go out in the evening and have beer and eat, because you need to be working around the clock. And it worked. So we were getting really clean meals for breakfast and lunch. And then we weren't eating for the rest of the day. And I'll tell you, I lost quite a lot of timber out in Thailand because I was doing all the workouts in the heat. I also obviously had the bad news of my friend passing away. But we had one conversation one night where it's just us, and you said to me, you know, mate, it's not really about calories, it's about hormones. Now, again, with the current sort of hot topic of clean eating, flexible dieting, and all this type of thing, you know, the flexible dieting crew will go hormones and they'll laugh. But tell us, do calories count, and what role do hormones play? I know you have touched on it already.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go a little bit deeper.
So do calories count? Yes, absolutely calories count, right? The other half of this, though, is that we don't know how they count, we don't know why they count, don't know how to when they're in the human body. And here's why. Because your hormones affect, you know, when you go on holiday and you go, you know, you're going out through Heathrow or Gatwick or whatever, right? You're going out through the airport and you know that you're, let's say you're going to Turkey and you need to change up for some Turkish lira or whatever, right? And you go, okay, well, there's a quid. Every time you go, let's say you've gotten used to going to, like, I go to Thailand a lot, so I get baht, right? Thai baht. Yeah. On this trip, I hand over 100 quid at the bureau de change and get like kind of the equivalent of about 50 baht per pound, right? The next trip I go, they're giving me 48 baht per pound. The next time I go, they're giving me 52 baht per pound because it depends upon the current exchange rate. Wow. The best way to think about your hormonal system is it's like a currency converter for calories on the body. We don't really know exactly what we know what a calorie is worth while it's here. Like kind of, you know, I'm eating this chocolate bar. I know this chocolate bar outside of my body is worth 500 calories. Mm. I don't know what the 500 calories are worth once they get inside of my body because I don't know which branch of my nervous system I'm in. I don't know how efficient my enzyme production is at the moment. I don't know kind of the current rates of various hormones in my body. I don't really know, right? So we don't actually know the value of calories once they get into the body. We know them outside of it, and that's what a calorie is. A calorie is a measure of the thing in isolation. It's not a measure of that up against this. Because then I can tell you I've done 5-day full calorific restriction fasting diets where I've actually gained muscle. I've gotten bigger at the end of 5 days, yes. Right? With zero calories, like literally only water and herbal tea passing my lips for 5 days, and I've gotten bigger. Right? Wow. I've eaten hypocaloric, and I've been able to gain weight in the past by being hypocaloric. Yes. And people will say, well, you must have been measuring wrong on all the rest of it, right? I'm pretty experienced at this, yeah. And I'm not out to lie and jiggle the figures. I'm kind of, I wanted to really know what was going to happen.
Sure.
Right? So here, that's really the best way to explain it. Kind of, if you think about it from a perspective of, yeah, a calorie is a calorie and they are real. Like anyone who says calories aren't real and they don't count for anything, they're a bit confused or a bit mixed up. I think I may have, even back in the day, I may have even perpetuated part of that. They are, forget about calories. It's not forget about it, but the reality is we don't know what they're worth. We actually don't know what they're worth when they meet the human system.
Right.
There's a better question to ask though. What governs calories? Because so this is the thing. First off, we're looking at pure restriction. Then we start to look at, you know, let's restrict calories. Then it's like, okay, it's not about the calories. It's about the detoxification process. Okay, well, kind of let's eat clean. Okay, now off the top of that, well, actually, it's all about the hormones. All of this, everything here, like the toxicity, detoxification, everything else, it's all being governed by the nervous system.
Yeah.
All of it. So your brain basically picks up environmental stimuli and it says, okay, which hormone, given what I'm experiencing in my environment this second, shit, I'm a bit stressed. Okay, so now my brain goes, cortisol.
Yes. Right?
And my cortisol levels start to go up. And because cortisol has gone up, everything else in me starts to change just slightly. The way my cells take nutrients and everything else is all starting to change at this moment in time. So it's my nervous system that governs my hormonal system. It's my hormonal system that governs my metabolic system.
Yep.
So what that tells us, this is, again, this is why I assert it's not what you eat, it's who you are when you eat it. Because you have direct influence over your nervous system. And because you have direct influence over it, if you can relax before eating, if you can give yourself time before eating, one of the things I often say to my clients, really simple rules, like we don't eat on the clock. Secondly, I always say, if you haven't got time to be with your food, don't eat it.
Yeah.
Like if you haven't got time, like if it's eating on the go and it's running around and it's kind of grabbing a bite to eat in between things, if you haven't got time to actually be there with that food and chew it and digest it, then don't eat it.
Yeah.
It's actually better for your nervous system. It's better for your body. It's better for your metabolic system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I'm with you.
Most people aren't doing this. Most people aren't actually addressing themselves. So what they're doing instead is trying to address themselves through calories.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so here's a very interesting one. Gluten. Okay, it seems now that, you know, gluten, the whole gluten thing is a fad. But we've often, in our programs, recommended gluten-free. And we have seen people with IBS literally say that they feel fantastic within 3 to 4 days. And the minute they introduce things like wheat, gluten, things like that, they end up in all sorts of bother. So I have stuck with the whole gluten-free recommendations in my plan. I've seen, you know, other trainers posting up about meta-analysis, about, you know, only affects celiac, but then I've also been reading up on non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Where do you stand on gluten, Dax?
Well, same as I stand with all the other stuff, really. Let's look at it this way. I don't really know what you're going to be sensitive to on any given day of the week, you know, because you either feel better when you take it out or you feel worse when you put it in or vice versa, right?
Yeah.
So, I, again, though, like pretty much like the elimination diet format, I think that when you take something out, when you restrict it temporarily with the aim of seeing what happens when you put it back, I think you're in a really positive place. When you restrict it arbitrarily and you just vilify it and you say it's the bad food,
yep,
then you're in a very weak place, right? So address it from the look, I'm being really honest to you, I don't know what the effect of gluten is on your body, but your body does.
Yes, right? Totally, yes.
So,
yeah.
So, and it doesn't matter that 17,000 research papers say, oh, the whole gluten thing is bullshit, because if I take gluten and I start to feel crap and I start to get spotty and I start to get kind of the craps and everything else, that's all that matters, right? Because no one has an owner's manual for me except me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you know, at the end of the day, think about it. Like, we're supposed to be personal trainers.
Yeah.
Right? And this is what most of us start out, personal trainers. Well, where is the personal in most of our approaches? Most of us don't allow for, like, even personal trainers aren't allowing for the personal to take place.
Right.
What we want to do is have huge blanket statements of right and wrong and left and right and up,
sure,
and down and,
sure,
black and white, right?
Yeah.
And instead come out from the perspective of, hey, do you know what? I don't really know, but what I've witnessed in a lot of people has been this.
If we
take it out, let's see what happens. And let's see what happens when we try and put it back,
yeah,
in again.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
And I think we can save ourselves a lot of problems, a lot of stress, a lot of arguments, a lot of enmity and a lot of anguish just by being honest and saying we don't know what we don't know.
Sure.
Right? And the reality is, because we're dealing with kind of responsive, reactive human systems that are changing moment by moment, we can't possibly know everything. But you think about what a modern-day personal trainer is trying to pretend that they are knowledgeable about everything is anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, endocrinology, kinesiology, biomechanics, you name it, right? We're not. Like, there isn't one expert in the world that has all of the information that they need in any one of those areas, let alone all of them combined.
Yep.
So let's just start to be honest about, we don't really know everything that works, but we've observed these patterns in people. And one of the patterns that I've seen is that if you take it out, a lot of people seem to feel a lot better. I don't know whether you're going to feel better or not, but we'll soon know, because when we try and put it back in again, your body's going to tell us whether it wants it or not. Let's just be honest.
Brilliant. Okay, great stuff. Really informative, Dax. Really, really appreciate this. Okay, this is brilliant. It's so much fire. Guys, this is going to be a very long podcast. We're going to do about another 10 more minutes, Dax, okay? If that's cool with you. All right?
Cool.
So, here's what I want to speak to you. I want to get a little bit more personal, all right? We've got 10 minutes. You're a 45-year-old man. You do a lot of traveling, all right? Now, a lot of my clients they're traveling, they're staying in hotels, and they always say, oh, how can I follow your program? And I say, look, they can be followed from everywhere. That's what has made my plan so successful. You're a big guy, you're a muscular guy, you're a very, very tall guy. Tell the lads listening the kind of training that you do when you're traveling, when you're tired, you're going from country to country. If you can talk for a couple of minutes on about how you stay fit, lean, and healthy. And then I want to talk about how you have managed and coped with post-traumatic stress disorder and how that's affected your training as well.
Sure. Okay, so from a training perspective, I mean, it's really, really quite simple. Most of the time when I'm traveling, I've got numerous, multiple different types of workouts, multiple different ways of training. So when I arrive at a place and I'm exhausted, very often, I'm doing something parasympathetic. I'm doing Tai Chi or Qigong, something relaxing. If I, you know, kind of, and I think this is an area that a lot of people don't address. They don't address the fact that You have to stop being in combat with your body. Most people are trying to beat their bodies into submission. And actually, you kind of, what you'll find is that your body will respond better if you actually give it some love instead of beating it up, right? Kind of, I think that's true of all relationships, right? Kind of,
yeah.
you come home, you smack your missus or your kids in the mouth and treat them like shit. They're not likely to want to be around you very much. You're not going to get the best response from them. it's no different than the relationship with ourselves. Like, okay, how am I? What am I feeling today? The industry has tended to have this gung-ho kind of, well, whether you want to or not, lace up your boots, get out there, you know, man up and go and do it.
Yeah.
What I'll say is kind of from personal experience, I found that definitely not to be true for myself. And, you know, I come from a really gung-ho background myself, like kind of, you know, Royal Marines and paras and all that kind of stuff, right? Kind of where it was all about man the hell up and go and do it, right? But giving yourself the opportunity to slow things down where it doesn't mean sit still, it doesn't mean don't do anything, but it just means, okay, what am I feeling today? Some days I do Tai Chi Chi Kung. Some days I just lay there and do deep diaphragmatic breathing on my bed, like meditation. Other days I might do isometric contraction-based work, like really, really heavy, intense, 30 to 60-second contractions in my pecs, in my arms, in my legs. Right? You can do that on an airline plane. Most people won't do this. But here's the thing. Your body doesn't know the difference between lifting a kettlebell, lifting a barbell, or doing a push-up, or just simply contracting your muscles. It doesn't really know the difference, right? It doesn't at all. So what I do, what I'll often do is very deep, intensive, isometric contractions. And as you've said, I'm quite a big guy, right? Like my arms are like 18 and a quarter. My chest is like 50 inches or whatever, right? I'm quite a large fella. If isometrics can keep my arms over 18 inches, it's going to work for your average person, right? Then I'm very often in my hotel room. I'm doing body weight training. I'm really big into little and often. I would rather drop and do kind of like 3 minutes of exercise now and then just get on with life.
Yeah.
Later on, come back and do another 3 minutes.
I've seen you mention that a lot. Yeah.
Right. That's how I tend to do it when I'm kind of on vacations or when I'm traveling. It's kind of little and often. Very often on vacation, you'll find me doing like up to 6 to 10 workouts per day. But most people wouldn't call them a workout. Most, you know, 3 to 5 minutes doesn't count as a workout for most people. But for example, on my last vacation, I was doing 500 skips of a skipping rope, 50 push-ups, 500 skips, 50 push-ups, 500 skips, and that was a workout. I just went and got on with life again.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can go and kind of get yourself to the hotel gyms, or you can go out for a jog or a walk or whatever it is that you fancy doing.
Yes.
And again, forget people that tell you jogging. Do you know what the most stressful form of exercise is? Making yourself do the exercise program that you don't want to do.
Yes.
So here's an interesting thing. Telling a person not to run because it elevates their cortisol, but they love running, they'll get more cortisol from stress of being told to run than they would have ever got from running.
Yeah.
So forcing yourself to do shit that you don't want to do is the best way to ram up your cortisol.
Yeah.
This is also why a lot of people won't do training when they're traveling, because they're like, oh, well, my trainer said, you know, for it to be a workout, it's got to be like an hour in the gym and you've got to do all these sets. So they go, so what's the point of me dropping to the floor and doing 20 push-ups and 20 sit-ups?
Sure.
Right? Whereas if you can go, oh, do you know what? I love this. I'm going to give myself 1 minute and I'm going to superset push-ups and jumping jacks for 1 minute. Boom. There you go. Go and get on with life.
Yeah.
If you do that and you enjoy it, you're going to get a lot more benefit from that than you ever would kind of spending an hour down at your gym.
Yeah. It's brilliant. It's brilliant because, you know, I put all these little bodyweight and kettlebell workouts into my members club. They're no longer than 5-10 minutes. And it's great because the lads just pick them and they go, right, I'll do that. And, you know, it can be done anywhere. So you very much go on how you're feeling, which is great.
Right.
Dax, we have had 52 minutes of fire. I want to try and wrap this up. I would love to talk all night, okay? But I've got to be somewhere and I just really appreciate the content. I want to wrap up about 5 to 10 minutes. I want you to, if you don't mind, because like I said, there's so many guys that listen to this that are going through things in their life. I want you to tell us a little bit more, because you've been very open on Facebook about your post-traumatic stress disorder, how it's affected you, your weight, your sleep, nightmares. Tell us a little bit about what led you to have the post-traumatic stress disorder and how you're living with it and dealing with it. Because you look great, mate. Look, seeing you now on Skype, you look very healthy and happy. But it hasn't been that case recently, is it?
No. I mean, it's been a tough 3 years, actually. So, I mean, basically, this originates from back with the tsunami. I was in the tsunami with my family. Fortunately, none of my family got hurt. We escaped the main wave, so we were running away from the water when it came in, and we got to the hotel. But Once we got the kids safe, I actually spent a lot of my time back out in the water. So I was like everything from holding bits of body on people to carrying dead bodies around to picking up dead babies to you name it. Like, I was involved in a lot.
What year was this, Dax? What year? Sorry, what year was this?
10 years ago now. Wow. 10 years. Wow. I was out there in the water with people, with bodies, doing first aid, kind of doing all of it for about 4 hours. I came back from the tsunami. I was absolutely, on the day I was a bit shook up after it all, but I had a job to do and I was fine. And I came back and kind of was really surprised that I didn't go downhill. It was a shock. I was like, okay, kind of get on with life. It was okay. I definitely wasn't suppressing anything. I definitely wasn't holding it in. I've always been quite an emotional guy. When I'm sad, I'm sad, and I tell people it, right? Yeah. Then a year later, I found my brother dead, kind of in his flat. My brother had been an alcoholic. Back in the day, he tried to give up, and apparently, unlike most drugs, alcohol is one of the things that is unsafe to go cold turkey completely overnight if you were a very, wow, very heavy drinker. He did. Made himself an epileptic as a result of it, and so he died of an epileptic fit in his sleep, I think. But I found him, like, he'd been dead for about 2 weeks, I think, and I found him, you know, kind of really badly decomposed in his apartment and all that kind of stuff. And again, big shock at the time, quite distressed for a little while, but kind of got over it, like got over the shock part of it. Certainly wasn't kind of, really missing my brother, but I wasn't kind of caught up in the horror of it very, very much. Because it was like something out of a zombie movie. It was really horrible. Kind of got on with life for about 7 years, just kind of doing really well. You know, most of the things that we spoke about, like me building all these businesses and traveling the world and royal clients and all this kind of stuff, have happened in that last 7 years. So I had a really good 7 years. And then about just 2.5 years ago, I was driving down the motorway, and I just got this kind of like flashback. It was like a dead body landed on the bonnet of my car. I mounted the pavement with a Land Rover. I kind of, like, it was nuts. And all this kind of stuff, I started seeing things. I actually thought I was going insane. I would see things. I would smell smells. I would hear sounds. I would be kind of sitting here like you and I are talking right now, and out the corner, I'd see like a dead body from the tsunami. I'd see kind of bits of. It looked like water was in my living room, and a leg would go, wow, floating past me or something like that. It was pretty insane. I literally thought I was going mad. I spent about a year and a half getting by on about 3 hours sleep per night, maximum. Some nights not even that. So kind of I did a couple of days where I actually really didn't sleep at all. I was dozing off at the wheel, almost crashing the Land Rover on the motorway and all this kind of stuff. I was really, really, really broken. And still, my sleep isn't awesome right now. Like, right this second, last 3 days I've gone through kind of a little patch where I'm not really sleeping quite so well. I'm not getting anywhere near as many flashbacks. And now I actually understand my flashbacks, because, again, coming from the side of coaching that I work in, which is a very neuroscience-based, as a coach, I'm not all about positive thinking and kind of soldier on through and you can do this. I'm actually much more interested in learning which parts of a person's brain are and aren't switching on. So I have a very neuroscience-based approach to coaching other people. And fortunately for me, I've been able to bring a lot of that to bear to understand what I'm seeing, what I'm experiencing. So whilst it's still shocking, whilst it's still not nice, while it still wears me down, at least I have the understanding of what's going on. A lot of people with PTSD, they don't really understand it.
Right.
And unfortunately, some of the approaches that they take don't tend to work. They don't address PTSD. Some of the things that people with PTSD really need is a physical outlet. They need to move. They need to be involved in things like meditation and calming their nervous system down. Like real deep breathing, kind of time alone every day, but then also timing, because it can go one way or the other, right? Kind of the time alone can go over the top and then you completely segregate and isolate and all that kind of stuff. And so it's important to get the mix right. It's important to get the mix right between the isolation and the integration.
Yeah.
Lots of, kind of also kind of learning to grab sleep where I can. Because I don't sleep awesomely at night, I'm not averse to taking little naps in the day. Very often when I'm going to my studio, I get up early, I drive to my studio, I get my sleeping bag out.
Yeah.
I go to sleep for an hour before my first client's getting, right?
Love it.
So it's, again, it's being kind to yourself. It's not saying, oh, your week you should be able to deal with this, or giving yourself shit about something that you don't have, because we don't have control over anything, but we have a lot of influence over lots of things.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's not trying to control things, it's trying to, what influence do I have here right now? What can I do?
Yeah.
So with my influence, I can say, right, okay, well, I'm going to take naps, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to take these vitamins, I'm going to take these supplements, I'm going to start meditating, I'm going to start deep breathing, I'm going to get involved in kind of reading more motivational literature, I'm going to stop watching kind of, you know, TV really, really late into the night. At the end of the day, we don't have control over anything in our life, but we have extensive influence. We can influence anything we want. We can influence how we eat, when we eat, who we eat with, where we go, what we do. We can influence all of that. We can't control any of it, right?
Sure.
So my journey over the last 2.5 years really has been it's been really instructive for me, because I've been a really fortunate guy most of my life. Like, I've had traumas occur in my life, clearly, like most of us have.
Yes.
But they didn't I was one of these extremely resilient people that always bounce back from them. So I never really got deep into the shit behind them. With the PTSD side of stuff, I've been able to kind of see the impact that long-term stress has on my clients, for example. I understand them a lot better than I ever did before. And what I would say from here about this, and like, because PTSD is just another form of stress. That's all it is.
Sure.
Right? It's just stress. If you've got stress in your relationship, if you've got stress in your job, and it's eating away and it's kind of tickling your brain all the time, and it's kind of making you feel negative, you have influence over it. It just doesn't feel like you do at the time. It's like, shit, what can I do?
Mm.
Right? Well, you can't control. You can't just click the button and switch it all off. But what you can say is, well, what can I influence right now, yes, today?
Yes.
Okay. And it's focusing on the influence that you can have, not worrying about all the things that you can't do.
Brilliant.
All the things that you believe you've got no control over, let them go and stop giving yourself crap about them, and instead come back and say, well, what do I have some influence over here right now, today, in this place, at this time? What can I do? And take that one action.
Well, Dax, it's been phenomenal. It's some amazing content here. 1 hour and 10 minutes we've been talking for. It's got to be my longest ever podcast, and I've really enjoyed just sitting back and listening to it, Dax. Just want to say a huge thank you to you for this content. I'm going to get this uploaded, add the jingles, get it onto iTunes, and hopefully we'll have it out by the weekend. And I know you're a busy man, and once again, mate, I'm really, really grateful that you jump on this call, and I hope my listeners will get something out of it. So Dax, once again, a big thank you, and I'm sure I'll be seeing you soon. All the best, Dax. Thank you, mate.
Enjoyed it. Bye.